Can I ask you a question, Mike?
Yes.
About those, the graphs, with the x-axis,
yes.
Do we assume that there has been an alternation between the batches or the lots with the most adverse events between the three different companies, in the sense that in a temporal dimension, not all of the adverse batches have been, let's say, released at the same time? Can we deduce that?
No. There was an initial analysis done by one of the team, and they made the assumption, a reasonable but incorrect assumption, that the alphanumeric number ordering was the same as time ordering of release of the vaccines. And because of that assumption, they produced, you know, a really worrying pattern of very toxic batches, then a gap, then slightly less toxic, then a gap, then less toxic, and so on. We can't make that deduction anymore. It might be true, but I don't think that analysis has been done. And similarly, we have not yet looked to see whether the most toxic, you know, Janssen batch was released at the same time as the least toxic Pfizer batch. We would have to do additional work. Personally, I don't think that was necessary, because the manufacturer, they know exactly where, you know, each batch goes, you know, which state, which medical center, you know, which office, and then eventually which patient's arm. They do know where every dose has gone. And so you could have, you know, toxic batches from more than one company being administered at the same time. I think if you're raising an implicitly very important question, actually, because I think by chance, you would think there'd be sometimes an overlap and sometimes not. And if we see a pattern that looks non-natural, Rainer, I think that would be additional strong evidence of premeditation. So we should go and do that. I think it's a very good question. So I can't answer your question, but I think I understand what was behind it, Robin, if that was what was behind it.
And the last one was again about the patterns, whether we can assume that or not yet. And as you answered, maybe we can find out more. When we look at this graph, it seems that the adverse events numbers step up, and almost especially in the Pfizer one, and peak and then step down. Is that again just the way that the batches have been organized around the x-axis, which is arbitrary, or is there any, could we see any pattern of stepping up and step it down, which would
yes,
also
yeah, no,
an experiment?
It does look, that bit does look real for any one manufacturer, if you just sort of slice them out from their others on that graph, because you can deduce date order for a manufacturer. So I think if you look at that Pfizer block, I think it goes from left to right, you know, from January 2021 to last month, something like that. And so the general trend is to lowering of numbers of serious adverse events. What I don't know is that because the number of doses being administered per day or per week, has that flattened off? Because we're now mostly in the phase, I think, of administering what they call boosters or third doses. Or it could be, well, the number of possibilities. So why is the number of adverse events, in unit time, reducing now? Because it does seem to be that. It could be that the system is being played with. You know, it could be that we're simply not seeing all the data. They call that throttling. I don't know what that means, but it's basically somebody might be cheating and holding back some of those records. That's possible.
Like, you, so, they don't need to put them in an order so that you can see a linear decline. They don't need it. They just can do it in a way which seems to be arbitrary, which seems to be by chance.
Yeah.
But they know which batch contains what.
And they do.
Can have a dose, can have this certain, the dose finding studies with this toxicity studies, and we don't see a systematic thing. We just see a big cloud of many dangerous batches, and then we see the baseline.
Wolfgang, you're absolutely right. The manufacturers can recreate the batch numbers and their empirical findings. They know
in different regions. They can place them in different regions. Yes. And they can supply them here and there so that there is no systematic visible.
Exactly that. That's another thing, actually, I forgot to mention, that if this was if this was innocent, then you would expect, would you not, that a batch or a lot would go to, on average, the same number of states each time. So whether that range is 2 to 10 or 3 to 4, whatever it is, you would expect them to be doing the same kind of thing. It might vary a little bit because obviously some states like New York, California, Florida, Texas are very big, and others like Vermont or whatever are quite small. But you know, as you smear the doses across the nation and go down the age band, you would expect a batch that seems benign should go to the same number of states as the batch that turns out to be toxic if it was innocent. And we need to go and check this, but certainly as of a couple of weeks ago, our findings were the most toxic batches were going to the largest number of states. And that's, if that's confirmed, Ryan, again, evidence of premeditation. How would they know ahead of time to distribute, to dilute the most toxic batches across the largest numbers of states? Well,
there is even this trick to disguise the whole thing, because they recommended the first shot and second shot, take a different one.
Yes.
And if you do this, it's even more difficult to find out the systematic which is in it.
Good point. No, that's I'm not sure. Yes, I think in most nations, I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure. I thought in most nations they got the same material, but they did mix them up. Yes.
They did explicitly recommend to take a different one the next time.
And that's so crazy, Wolfgang, isn't it?
I mean, yes.
The clinical trials were not done like that. So we have no safety data for that. And so when you see things like that, ladies and gentlemen, you should be very afraid, because people like that.
There is one other dimension. We just see the very actual reactions of the health reactions or toxic reactions. We don't see the long-term damage which may occur, and so something is in the cloud we do not yet recognize. But because they have all the data and they have all this this data collection of the people, with the health data, they have the vaccination data, they have the testing data, and they have the genetic data, even if they analyze the PCR. So they can really find out a lot by those trials they do this.
Yes.
And find out whether the patents are worthwhile to be further developed or not.
No, it's a very good point you make, Wolfgang, that whilst we know an unprecedentedly large number of people have reported injury and indeed death, the numbers of deaths they're huge for a vaccine, but they're not large, say, compared with the normal death rate. So in advanced, plump, elderly Western populations, it's somewhere around 1%, just under 1% of the population, mostly the old people, die every year. And if the vaccines have killed as many as 1 in 1,000, which is like a tenth, that would be awful and a terrible crime, but it's not on its own going to move the needle on population. But if they do propose, either to return with more toxic materials in the future, or to Wolfgang's point, maybe 9,999 people haven't yet learned what's in store for them. If you've been given one of these materials, I just don't know what's in it. Does that prime you for a very serious medical event if you should encounter some second stimulus? If I was a bad person, I could definitely design some nasty things using this technology easily.
Yeah, Mike, you have the experience. You know how long it takes to prepare such a study.
Yeah.
And so it is not just a study which is just improvised, but it's a study. It seems to me this is an experiment they prepared at least 10 years ago, because you have all those vaccines that now are running in trials. Yes. 128, says WHO, with two of them with self-replicating viruses. And this was published long ago. We just heard it. The veterinary, they tried it out with animals already, self-replicating viruses, and now it's in the clinical studies with all those 120 different.
Wolfgang is saying, and he's absolutely right, and I can exemplify, it's far too fast. If those programs were initiated in response to December 2019 and onwards, then that's what, just 2 years, something like that. The preclinical phase, the amount of time we would spend in the lab thinking about it, doing experiments, optimizing, selecting the drug candidate, manufacturing it, doing toxicology, you wouldn't be, it would be extremely unlikely that anyone had got into the clinic. Maybe you could go more quickly these days, but if they're all in phase two, I'm afraid.
Mike, you know better than anyone that those people know what they want to show for their investors and what they want to hide.
No, that's true. But that's very worrying. Yes. Go ahead.
To ask like two things, like one thing is it possible to see like what kind of age group were affected by the respective toxic batches, and the other thing is like when we talked about this beforehand, you said that there's only very few people maybe needed to do these kind of variations if it's done on purpose. I mean, it wouldn't change anything because obviously it's out there to see for everyone, both for like government plus for the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So, I mean, if it was like a natural process or like a, you know, like a, just a problem of production, they would immediately interfere and change the system or take out, like try to resolve the problem or even like put like a moratorium on it or something like that. So it's clear that it's, it must be, it's very likely that it's something like on purposeful that's going on. But like how many people would you actually see to be involved? And also, would it be possible to look at the age toxicity?
Yeah. So I've noted that question. It's a good one. I will again, I'll get back to the team. And I think it might be useful to have a different person from the team because, there are so many very good questions. They may know the answers and I just don't. Like I said, I'm not the actual analyst. But to your question about how many people would need to be involved, and it's rather worrying that it might be a very small number. If you think about it, these they're basically gene sequences. So they're either sequences of RNA bases, one joined to another, or DNA bases. And we have machines that will synthesize that. And then once you've synthesized it, you can then copy it, ironically, using PCR. It was originally invented as a manufacturing technique, not an analytical technique. So the process is fully automated. Once you program what it is you want the machine to make, and maybe it makes it in pieces, as I was describing for a drug substance earlier, maybe it's made in a few pieces and you warrant that each of the pieces is what you want, and then you anneal them together using molecular biology. That could be how they do it. But when the machine is humming away and manufacturing the gene sequence, it looks exactly the same to a supervisor or a shift worker putting raw materials in and whatever. Whatever it's making looks exactly the same. So it might be only, it could be as little as one controlling mind for the whole thing, certainly per company. You don't have to have a team of 40 sort of cogitating and arguing. If you know what you're doing and all you're going to do is change the code, one person would be enough. Of course, I don't know what they're doing. Some people have said, oh, maybe they've added a chemical. I don't know. I literally don't know. But if they haven't, they might have just modified the gene sequence so that a different effect than the one we expected to happen will actually happen. And I don't know how we're going to get it out of them. These things are actually very hard. I don't want to go over this in great depth, but when I first heard that they were using these and intending them as a mass vaccination, when I left Pfizer 10 years ago, techniques or materials like this were almost a laboratory curiosity. We did attempt to use them in some experiments in cells and cell culture, and they didn't work very well. There were toxicities associated with them. Delivery to the inside of cells was problematic. Stability of the material, even identity of what you were adding to the cell culture was often difficult to be really sure about. And so the idea that within 10 years, numerous companies are able just to manufacture these like M&Ms and Smarties. That doesn't fit for me. That's not possible.
We have some big responsibility now.
Yeah,
because we have to think to spread this news, and I find it very, very interesting that there is this homepage, where you can find out how bad is my batch.
That's one of the
I'm trying to find it in Google, but I did not get it. Google hides it. And I have put it on my homepage. You have to have to take a different searching machine and have to different internet programs to find it. But it's very good. All batches are there, even the actual ones that I use now that are on the market.
Wow.
And I have to say to all doctors, please, doctors, now when you know that there are dangerous ones and that there are less dangerous ones, if you really go on giving those jabs, you should at least have a look whether the batches you got to inject are those which are dangerous, where you kill your patients, or whether they are less they make less harm. But this, and also the pharmacists, what they have in their stock, they should have a look, and they should try to find out, and first have to know what sort of batch they use. And then, or they should use, and then give it. But, and every patient, too, he should ask his doctor. And he said, doctor, did you check it, whether it's a batch or not? And this makes the doctor even be aware that there are bad batches. And even if the doctor starts thinking, then he will find out, why are there bad batches and good batches?
Mm-hmm.
This is not possible.
No.
If I give an injection and there's some label on it, it should always be the same one. What does he say to the patient? And perhaps he has a look on this information, and he starts thinking. I think this is a very important thing we have to tell the patients. Yet if you are forced to take the jab, ask your doctor, is it a good batch? Or is it a bad batch?
Yeah.
You know there are good and bad batches.
No, I think it's very important.
I show you the literature. Show you the literature, doctor.
Yeah.
Please tell me, is this a good? I come back when you can tell me whether it's a good one or a bad one. Then I'll come back. But now I don't take it. Mm. It's too dangerous, doctor.
Yeah.
You have to do it like this.
Yeah, and we.
And then you can bring all those people that they start thinking and that start researching themselves what's going on.
Yeah, the one that you're mentioning, we've published one of them on the Telegram channel, and it's howbad.info.
Yes.
Maybe more, but the one that we put on our Telegram channel is howbad.info, so people can check there.
I would like to ask one additional question. So are we sure that these vaccines are really produced, like, for instance, on a Pfizer plant or like a Johnson & Johnson plant? Because there's also companies who do the production process for like pharmaceutical products. Like, for instance, I think there's a company called Emerging Biosolutions. And I heard, I'm not quite sure, that they are involved in this kind of production process as well. So it could be that that it's actually like maybe one, like just one plant of a, you know, supplier who makes all these vaccines with the, like the ingredients according to, I mean, the protocol of each company. I mean, the pseudo or like the seeming protocol, but then we maybe have other protocols going on at the same time. But it could be that it's not really on one plant of the, like really the visible producer.
You're absolutely right. People may not know this, but although during my career, lots of companies acquired one company after another, what they didn't do is keep everybody. Because I remember at one point, one of my employees had like 47 production plants around the world. And it's clearly, that was just a consequence of four or five or six companies all rolling up together. And so what happened was, over time, some of those plants, they went through what's called, I think it's a management buyout, an MBO, and they would acquire several of the estates of manufacturing, and then they would provide a contract manufacturing specialty to the industry, not just their former owners. And you are right, I won't name them because it kind of could blacken their name and they might not be involved. But there is a whole parallel industry of contract manufacturers. And theoretically, of course, their job ought to be to be highly skilled in sort of regulatory quality manufacture. And so that lifts the burden off the drug company. Of course, in the end, what is it that the drug company does? It's a friend of mine remarked that it's a bank with a drugstore on the side of it, really.
What about clinical research organizations? What about the clinical research organizations? You think there are big ones who are able to manage all this?
Yeah, again, most of the research is now tolled out. So the manufacturer, Moderna would be in charge of whatever it is that's being done. But the execution, the recruitment of patients, their screening, the pre-randomization visits, administering the substance, the daily, weekly, monthly follow-up, and so on, all of that would be managed through clinical CRO, clinical contract research organization. That's true of toxicology, manufacture, clinical. And so, in the end, it's what is it that what's the core skill of the drug company? And I can't tell you anymore. And that's why a friend said they're like a bank with a drugstore on the side. And it's, I don't really know what it is that's at the heart of these organizations anymore. It used to be, certainly Pfizer was very famous for having drug discovery at its core, and it was led by people who are generally medicinal chemists rather than biologists. So Wellcome was very much sort of biology-led. There's nothing wrong with either. You have to have those kind of skills. But what are they led by now? I would think profit motive and litigation expertise, because they know they're going to get sued. And so as long as they make much more money than they pay in fines, it seems to me that's unfortunately the sad end of what used to be an industry I was proud to work in, not anymore. Even if I could, I wouldn't serve any of these organizations anymore. They've permanently done themselves in my eyes.
Could I sort of, in addition to my question, does it show on the sheets that come with the product where it's actually been produced?
I don't think so. I don't believe so. No. You wouldn't be able to tell whether it was made in New Jersey or, New Amsterdam, whatever. I don't think so. The company will know because there will be this identifying code, and they damn well better know, not just where it was manufactured, they better know where all the raw ingredients came in and who signed off step three. Seriously, if they don't know that stuff, they're breaking the law. Because in order to do, good manufacturing practice, you need to know the answer to that question. If a skilled investigator said, I want to know everything about that particular batch, I want to know what was the starting material 3 months ago, and what did you do to warrant that the supplier that sold it to you had the right quality and purity and safety and so on, every part of that needs to be demonstrated. So and that's why I think it cannot be an accident, because the normal discipline, which is incredibly, it's almost obsessive and rightly so, means that you can't end up with products with performance variability like this, because that implies different stuff in the vial, and that just can't happen by accident. So, but how many actors are involved? It could be lots or a few. So again, if we were thinking of how could something illegal be hidden? One would think it's not as hard as one might think. It really isn't.
Let us think. Where should I send the state attorney to find out?
Where shall I?
where should we look for the files? Is it the clinical research organization?
One question, because you always said that, for instance, the Paul Ehrlich Institute, that they would need to have kept some of the vials for retesting or the term is for that. But would they know where these products were produced?
I think they just rely on the data they get from producers. This is what they said. They said, we have a contract with them, and they have conditions they have to fulfill, and they have to give us a report, and we rely on the report of the producers. They don't do it themselves, I think, but I don't know it.
Yeah, no, that is it. That's exactly right. You rely on the assurances that are made and the internal sort of quality control processes of your supplier or your client, whatever it is, as it passes down the chain, because clearly it's not possible to personally warrant that all the starting materials are exactly what you say. So you have a series of like nested quality control and audit. So audit is the most appropriate way, because when you do an audit, you can take a cross section through any part of the research, development, commercialization of a product, and they would do that. Experienced people.
Who pays that? He has a lot to say.
That's a good point. If you end up with the regulators being funded by the drug companies, which I think is true, actually, it's called PDUFA, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act.
I asked some people who make the control, the pharmaceutical controls in the countries, in German Länder. They have pharmacists who normally control whether what is written on the label is in the drug, but they are not able to do it now with these new drugs. They are not able to. You have to sequence or have special techniques, so it's not possible to control it by that it is done by those institutions that are normally protecting us from such a thing.
Yeah,
they are not able to do it.
No, I agree. The analysis is not straightforward as it would be in the case of a pill that contains, say, 50 milligrams of whatever, some new antiviral. Yeah. The chemical structure would be declared, and therefore the analytical performance, that the wavelengths of absorption of light and the molecular sizes of a fragment of it in a mass spectrometer, all of those things. We would know how to confirm that it is what they say. But these, I think some of the genetic bases, RNA and DNA, are non-natural. I think they've modified them. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you declare it. But what it means is that in order to stabilize the product, some of the bases are non-natural, so they're not found in nature, and some of the analytical techniques won't pick them up. You may need to develop a new methodology even to check the product. So it's tricky, really tricky.
Yeah. If they would be forced to tell the sequences, exact sequences, you could make a PCR to find the sequences.
Yes.
And the PCR could be spread, and all the control institutions could use the PCR and use it with the drug, and they could see whether the sequences are in or not. But they would not find those sequences they don't know.
No.
They only won't find those sequences which are labeled. And so this doesn't help us.
No. Yes, that's right. If you had a pure sample, just a solution, and you wanted to establish what was in it, if you don't know which non-natural nucleic acid, RNA and DNA, if you don't know which ones they've used, you cannot then design an analytical system to sequence it, because it'll be wrong it is a serious problem. It really is. It's no good just seizing a sample. You couldn't have the police go in and seize the samples, and then a week later we'd know what it is. So you can't measure that which you're not even knowing to look for. It's that's something I learned in my forensic science placement. It's incredibly difficult to work out what's in a person, if they've died, or in a vial in this case. Unless if you have some presumptions, then you can confirm those or show that it's not true. That's the routine technique. If you don't know, for example, what's killed a person, and you suspect, you have a suspected death, if you don't know what to look for, it's incredibly hard. And the same is true here. I could imagine many different schema that would produce the effect that we've got. But there could be 100 others, and might be none of the above. So, unless somebody leaks this information, all we can do is present both the public, the professionals like Dr. Wolfgang, as you said, and the companies themselves. If someone will hold them legally to account, then they would have to answer questions as to, well, how are these erratic performing batches? How has that come about? That would be my first question.
I think
if you agree that's the record, how did that happen?
We have enough information with this variation of toxicity. Yeah. We have enough information to stop all of them.
Yes.
Normally, concerning the legal framework of pharmaceutics, we could now say no, not one single jab anymore. Because we have these findings. This is enough normally.
Yes, that's a very good point, actually. I should have made and will make again. Yes, that the in view of the fact that, a team has established, and these are independent people, we came together because we had this common interest. We didn't come together and then do the work. So these are people who've come from very different skill sets. But we all agree that there is extreme variation in the toxicity profile, that we all agree that there are some other nuances that,
if they're true, stop them.
There is some emerging data that suggests there's, you may have seen a film called Death by Alphabet, and at least for one manufacturer, it does horribly. It looks like the ordering of toxicity does relate to the alphabetical sequencing of a middle letter in the code. But I'm not in a position to say whether that's true or not, but I can assure you we're doing additional work. Additional work is going on. So, Rhino, if that were to turn out to be the case, that clearly can't be chance, I don't think. So, you know, if that's true, that would greatly augment the case. But yes, Wolfgang, personally, I would have been satisfied. Well, as you and I know, back in December 20, we thought it was inappropriate to use these at all. That the it would have been better to have allowed early treatment to have been used, and I think that would have been, it would have meant only the people who needed intervention would have received it, and everyone else would be left alone. Whereas this mass vaccination is introducing dangerous, poorly characterized materials that are also now being manufactured in a very suspicious way. Are being given to a very high percentage of the population, and as I've said before, there's already there's very clear evidence of heavy duty deception, censoring, and control of narrative. That when you then take that together with these observations of the vaccines, could easily be at the worst end of people's worries. You know, like depopulation. Anyone who's heard this now, I think they would be foolish to dismiss the idea that there's a takeover and that they might want to, you know, kill quite a percentage of the world's population. That's absolutely possible. I can't know that that's what they're doing, because not my crime, as I've said before. But if you just look at the creeping authoritarianism, vaccine passports. I don't know if you've had any other speakers talking about it. I think you had Robert Malone, but just to say again, this to anyone who doubts it, if you've been vaccinated, you've received double jabs, whatever it is, of one of the products, you're not safer to be next to than I am. You're not. The evidence is they don't stop you acquiring an infection, so it doesn't do you any good, and it does not stop you transmitting it, for example, to me. I, by sheer luck, actually was ill for a few weeks in the summer, and I had a test and I was positive, so maybe I've had it. And if that's true, I've got good immunity. So I ought to be someone you would say, well, I can't give it to anyone because I can't now get clinically ill with it. So it's just nonsense, all that vaccine passports, only people they benefit are the people who are pushing them, like Gates and Blair and Schwab and other people. They do not make you safer. And it's very important that I say that, because I am very worried that, I don't know what it is. Professor Matthias Desmet said that there's this mass formation of people in greater fear than they should, but it's been pushed for that reason. If those people think vaccine passports and people who've been vaccinated are safe to be around, or safer, and, you know, I'm a dirty individual who's not been vaccinated, that's not true. But if they believe it, if I try and say, look, these vaccine passports are really digital ID and they're going to remove your human liberties, they'll fight me. Yeah. Because they'll think I'm trying to remove something that's essential to their safety. So it's literally a diabolical scheme, because I can see how much resistance there will be to removing it, vaccine passports, if they're introduced into a society. And so and it's easier said than done, but my earnest hope is that we stop them being introduced in the first place, if you possibly can. It's so much easier to prevent them being installed than to remove them afterwards. I don't know how to get rid of them. Sorry, Wolfgang.
Mike, they also try to make us get lost in details.
Yeah.
It's such a big crime. It's so obvious now. Don't discuss all those details they offer us to discuss. things they can, they send us other specialists and they speak about details and variants and area test and new test. It's a nonsense. It's a big crime. And it's so obvious now. And
it is.
What we have to do is to wake up the doctors and to wake up the pharmacists and to wake up the people that they are just victims of criminals. And
yes, no, they are. Exactly.
The people now running on the street in all German towns and everywhere in Europe and all over the world, they know it already. They know it and they are aware. And we have to strengthen them and give them all the arguments and to persuade those, the other people, to follow them on the street and to be on the street too, and not to say no to this crime, to this very, very big crime.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I made a short speech for the so-called Spaziergänger, the walkers that stroll around the streets in Germany. Uh-huh. I made a short speech of 15 minutes where I tried to explain all this. We speak about now more than 1 hour. And I tried to explain it because it's so important that we give those informations and to give them the arguments to convince them to all the neighbors, come out, don't tolerate this anymore.
Well, here's the thing. At this point in time, I think this must be considered the missing link. This is the smoking gun. If you look at the totality of the evidence, if you look at what we've been talking about, the fact that these vaccinations are not vaccinations, because what is a vaccine? It's something that makes you immune. Now, these shots do not make you immune. Even the makers of the vaccines admit that. They don't make you immune. They don't protect you in any way. Secondly, we've been lied to. We all know we've been lied to right from the start. Third, starting with the PCR tests and asymptomatic infections. That's what they needed in order to start this whole thing, in order to get the public health emergency of international concern, which ultimately led us to the so-called vaccinations. And there's lots of censoring going on, lots of censoring. Why is that? Well, if you look at this piece, even without knowing any more, any of the details that we've been speculating about, it is enough to show us that what is happening is they're this is within this gigantic experiment, they're experimenting with lethal dosages. For what purpose? For what purpose? It can only be done because they want to reduce the population without us understanding this. That's why they're experimenting with lethal dosages, because if they killed everyone in one at the first shot, it would be very obvious. So that is what's happening. That's enough for me. That's way more than enough for me, and should be way more enough for any prosecutor. We're going to get them.
I hope so. I mean, the reason, one of the reasons I also thought depopulation was likely was that early on, we had people like Bill Gates. Yes, he's a rich man, he's influential, but he's not a biologist or a doctor of any kind.
Yeah.
And he was on the TV saying the world won't return to normal until pretty much everyone's been vaccinated. And I thought, that's just the most stupid nonsense I've ever heard. Vaccines have never been used to extinguish a pandemic in human history. So this would be novel. So yeah, and then next, you only vaccinate people who are themselves at severe risk of adverse effects, including death if infected. That's it. So I knew he was lying when he said that. He's not competent to say it, so he must have another reason for saying it.
Who gave him the authority?
You know, exactly. And he said it repeatedly, but then I'll tell you what, then I heard Blair, another well-known biologist, talking about the necessity to have these vaccine passports to reopen society. It's just, hold on, is this the same Tony Blair, former British Prime Minister, who tried unsuccessfully to introduce digital ID into the British system? Yeah, it's the same guy. So it was obvious that's what it was, even though we didn't yet know what the performance of the vaccines were, but we did know that the trials didn't include transmission. They were not looking to see whether transmission was reduced. That would be the only possible argument, I think, for vaccine passports, or basically insisting that to protect society, you should be vaccinated. I would have a problem with it anyway. And I think I heard Jordan Peterson speaking about this, and he said that he thought that the measures that were being introduced, quotes, to make us safer were likely to have a much more dangerous effect on the population, you know, and civil society than the effect of the virus. And he said they're not comparing what's the impact of these imposed measures on civil society and the rule of law and so on, compared with the unmitigated effects of the virus. And he said, you know, clearly you need to weigh these things up. And he said, in my mind, the responses to the virus are much more dangerous to the alleged stability of society than the virus. And he's right. And it needs clever people like that just to sort of look at it from a philosophical point of view, not just science, because then you get the high priest syndrome where, you know, if Sir Chris Whitty this or Sir Patrick Balance that, that then becomes law almost. And people like, you know, Wolfgang or myself don't get to contribute to it. And so I know Robin has been spending a lot of time talking about bodily integrity. You know, these are not rights that your governments can give away. They're yours. We've agreed them between us as human beings, yeah, through the agency of our governments over the years. We're signed up to these UN bioethics agreements that says, you know, we're not going to allow human beings to be coerced into medical experiments. We're not going to allow it. But that's what's happening in your country. They're saying you can't go to work or to a shop or to a social event unless you take this jab. That's the same as being forced to take part in a medical experiment. That's something we've decided is never going to happen. It's, you know, it's in breach of half a dozen agreements and compacts physicians have with each other and their patients, between lawmakers of different countries and their citizens. They don't have the bloody rights to take that away. No. So we've got to come out on the streets and just say, hold up the sign that says, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah, we do not consent, because this
is... Do not consent, you're not going to comply.
What I want to say is that I agree that Mike's presentation is from the work of the virus is a very convincing smoking gun. But I think we've got at least two smoking guns. The other one is, as you were mentioning, to do with very blatant violations of human rights. That the problem is that people don't seem to know about these rights. So we have two smoking guns. Inevitably, at the stage we are at now, where divisiveness is encouraged by the authorities, we have a very divided population, and some of them will refuse to see either one or the other, if not both, smoking guns. And in that case, it's very important to get this information that you presented today out. Inevitably, some people will reject it, as they have rejected other evidence so far. Mm-hmm. For those people, we also have to try and show them the smoking gun of leaders, very obvious leaders, including, as mentioned before, Bill Gates and Macron, who are actively using words which are in complete violation with our human rights. And that is, in my view, an incredible smoking gun. If we use their words and we compare them to what our rights are, that is a smoking gun of human rights violations amounting arguably to crimes against humanity. So we have at least two. One, yeah, is medical, scientific injection and toxicity and adverse events level. And the other one is for people who maybe are less versed with even, you know, for some people may find difficult to even understand what VAERS is. I mean, we, yeah, should deal with it. So for those people, I think it's very important to show them another level of smoking gun, which is entirely to do with human rights. And as you said, bodily autonomy is something that people tend to understand, and that there's a huge push now to use the Together group in the UK to show and mm-hmm. to that aspect. So I think that there's some people may have a different vision of smoking guns. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, no, that's very important. I think there's not been that many people with tremendous reach. I mean, I'm kind of on the lower margins, but certainly people like Malone and McCulloch and so on, and a handful of others. In a sense, I think you're alerting me, Robin, to the idea that I'm seeing this through the sort of medical scientific lens, because that's the kind of person I am. But that cannot be the only way of trying to communicate with people, because most people don't see the world through those lenses. And in fact, in a pissing competition, they're more likely to give the government the benefit of the doubt. Right? And that's why I've not been comparing their opinion with my opinion. I'm saying that it's a matter of fact that they're telling you something that's not true. Because now it's a different question. Although the matter is scientific, I'm asking them to judge whether my assertion that they're being lied to is correct. Right? And if you think I sound competent and honest, and you can go and check some of the things I say and think, oh my God, you know, that he's right that they are telling us lies, that's a completely different category of decision for the members of the public. And so I've been exhorting my medical and scientific colleagues for about a year to say, stop engaging in pissing competitions by showing your analysis of the cases data. No one gives a shit. They're always going to ascribe a little bit more trust to government scientists than people who are knights of the realm and lord this and so on. That's what will happen. We know this from Milgram experiment. They're always going to give them the benefit of the doubt. So luckily for me, they are lying, and I can use the L word all the time. If they want to come and sue me, do you know what? I would welcome it. You will lose, you guys. You will lose. So by all means, put me in my place and sue me. I look forward to seeing you in court.
I have no doubt that if we talk to all of the experts who we've spoken to, the psychologists, the psychiatrists, the epidemiologists, immunologists, the lawyers, the economists, they will all come to the same conclusion. This is intentional, premeditated mass murder. There's absolutely no doubt about it, because nothing else makes any sense. And just by coincidence, you mentioned Bill Gates. There's two more smoking guns we have here. We have two short videos, very short video clips. One of them shows, you know them, but one of them shows him explaining about the, I think it's about 15 years old, explaining about the return on investment that you get from investing in pharmaceutical, vaccine makers rather than the tech industry. And the other one shows him, he looks like a complete imbecile. He's being interviewed by the CIA, I think.
Yes.
He looks and acts like a complete imbecile. It is inevitable. You must come to the conclusion that this is a psychopath.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Yes, I think that's the video where I think he's about 40 years old and he's being investigated for, I don't know, inappropriate competition, something like that.
Yeah.
And he's rocking like a nutcase. Yes. And basically, he's asked the same question several times, and then he starts to dispute the meaning of the words in the question.
Yes.
Like, I think it said, what other browsers were you concerned with in the year 1990, whatever it was? He said, I don't understand what you mean by the word concern. It's like, you definitely are. you do know what he was getting at, but he was going to not answer by just pretending. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe he genuinely didn't understand what was meant on this occasion.
Oh, he did.
So, do you know what? I don't get into the who's done it, because I genuinely don't know. All I know is that there are a handful of people who are part of the perpetrators. So, I mean, honestly, you couldn't come up with a more Bond villain person than Klaus Schwab. He's wonderful, isn't he? Honestly.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tony Blair, come on, and then Gates.
Great for Ted, James
Fred Ross. Honestly, I think these people they're very wealthy puppets, but they're still puppets. I think it's the people above them. We're never going to see them. We don't probably even know their names. And I think they're the super capitalists. These are like the central banking class, Catherine Austin Fitz calls them. So there's no point. We have to accuse certain people, and they definitely are guilty of the things that we're saying. Yeah. But I don't know how you get at the people behind them. I mean, Ronnie, you probably have at least a better idea of how hard it is. But when people say, who's doing this? I go, do you know, I don't know. It doesn't make any difference. Am I going to do something different if it's person X or person Y? Not really. All I can do is tell you that you're not being told the truth, and these bloody products are dangerous, and they're lying to you, and it cannot be accidental. So that's bad enough. And just stop cooperating. Masks don't work. They can make you ill. At least they'll make you frightened. You'll look around and notice that everyone's wearing masks. Surely your hind brain, your lizard brain, is telling you that means there must be a hazard. It's all about maintenance of fear, so that you never can relax back into a normal life. But stop wearing the mask. Stop submitting to testing. Don't let them vaccinate you. You know, if you, unless you, whatever, you don't need them anyway. They're not safe enough, these bloody things. And it was not likely, really. Warp speed. Come on, you can't invent a new class of medicine at warp speed and expect things to be all right. That's not how biology works. God and nature don't let you do that. And so, yeah, we just need to take back our power, as they say. And, you know, I think some of Robin's points are really important. You are being abused. We are all being abused by these people. The narrative, the censorship, you know, the lying, you know, it's ghastly. It's worse than anything that we would have said, you know, those people in oppressive states over there, you know, in the East or whatever, South, you know, whatever. We're worse. We are now, I think we're worse than people we've criticized in the past. I've said to people that, you know, if you think you're going to get another chance to, as it were, vote this lot out, you know, whistle for it. At the moment, democracy is dead, and all the institutions that would normally defend us are malfunctioning or corrupt. So, you know, and I've mentioned the Royal College, is just absolutely appalling. The Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynecology isn't protecting, you know, pregnant women. You know, they're not. They're actually throwing them under the bus. They're saying, go and get these not tested vaccines. And that's, it's literally criminal. You should be ashamed of yourself. And I've said to people who are working in any of these big companies, if you've got any self-respect, you should do at least two things. One is go through the complaint process, go and see your boss. And if they won't talk to you, the boss's boss, till you're at EVP level, board member. And, you know, if you don't get good answers and you're not, then you need to resign publicly. Come on, some of you are in your late 50s. You can afford to stop earning. You know, look yourself in the mirror and be able to say, I did something to try and save my children and grandchildren. Resign, for Christ's sake. Imagine if hundreds of you senior people in your 50s resign all at the same time. That would be unhideable. You could do that. You should do that.
Well, I mean, to remember like what Professor Desmet said, that, yeah, you know, if it's like the hypnosis can be like kind of poked open by like a large enough shock. And, you know, yeah, this, like what we discussed today, shock. I find this so absolutely shocking, and it absolutely grosses me out if this turns out to be correct. Because, I mean, just imagine this sort of brain or like person or like, you know, this constellation that you do something like this. I mean, you can maybe, yes, you know, pick measures that are exaggerated or like that are, you know, maybe you have political ideas, you know, that are maybe not adequate or something. But like this thing, you know, that you'd actually do this kind of experimenting with like toxicity levels, I think this is really going to give me a very, I don't know, very tough night. You know, it's really yeah, nightmare inducing.
No, it is very bad. One of the reasons I came, I'm in America now, legally, I'm properly visaed. One of the reasons I came here is not just to escape what might happen in the UK, and I'm very worried about that. I mean, I have been very vocal as a critic of the government, and it occurs to me that at some point they might decide censorship is not enough and they'll just come and pick me up in a dark windowed van. I don't fancy that. But the other reason I came to America is, I mean, in the southern half of America, I realized that people don't recognize evil anymore. They think that there's a continuity of like good to not really good, and maybe a bit bad. But I think you've just made the point. This is like, you know, orders of magnitude worse. This is something none of us who are not psychopaths could possibly do and still survive, still sleep. But some people are able to do this. Now, I don't know whether they've got some sort of internal justification, like, you know, the environment will be destroyed if we don't reduce the population. So this is a tough job. I've got to do it. I think that's bullshit, by the way. But you can imagine someone kind of deciding to fool themselves like this. But like I said, I think we've come to rely, and I'm afraid I'm the most guilty of all of us. I've relied all of my life, as it were, on the scientific method that can be done publicly as the way of deciding things that can be, that are objective. Obviously, everything else is a matter of opinion. But anything that's kind of objectively measured measurable, the scientific method will do. But it doesn't. It doesn't when you come to matters of the heart and of the mind, where it's not, you're not trying hard or maybe sometimes falling short, you're doing something that's evil. Scientific methods are useless. You need other tools, and I don't really know what they are, but they include religious faith or whatever, what you think is the right conduct for a human being. And that can't be found through science. And you are right, I don't want to give you a bad night, but if that is the effect of what I've said for people hearing this the first time, then I'm glad, because it's hitting home. I can't tell you exactly when it was, but when it first occurred to me that, oh my God, the bits only fit together if this is about control and potentially depopulation, I can assure you, I didn't sleep well. I didn't sleep properly for weeks, 2 hours at a time, and I would wake up and I would open my eyes and I'd see evil just out in the dark. So whatever's going on, whatever's driving this is, it's darker than anything that's happened this century. But unfortunately, there are numerous examples in the last century of people who are able to do this. I remember famously one of the statements of, I think, Stalin, or attributed to him, was that a single death is a tragedy and a million is a statistic. And I think there are plenty of people involved in this crime that think that way. If they injured a person or someone close to them suffered and died, they'd cry just like you and I, but they have no problem in giving an order that will result in 10 to 7 people dying. I think they have no problem with it. And that's...
Mike, it's the same people. It's the same people who have been responsible for all of these horrific things that happened over the centuries. I remember Vera Sharaf telling me that she couldn't believe, she's a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
She couldn't believe she's still fighting the same people, or at least the same system that she fought 80 years ago. So we're dealing with the same structures. We're still dealing with the same evil-minded people. But this time, we're going to do them in. This time is different.
We're definitely going to do that. Yeah, we won't stop. And there are too many of us who have woken up, and more all the time. So, yeah, you'll see, hopefully, like a relay. I say to people, I describe it as a resistance relay. Do what you can. Don't be me. It's hard being me. But each expert brings their own expertise, their own style, things they say. But if you know that this is wrong, if you've accepted that this is wrong, then you don't need to stay quiet because you're not a scientist. It's absurd. Robin's pointed out that our human rights that we have agreed, things post-war and so on, that we've decided we're never going to do again, they're being transgressed. You can stand up and say that. And we're not taking this anymore. So the resistance relay is an idea. You don't need to have any specialty at all, other than, I guess, a backbone. If you've got a backbone and you think this is not right, that's your minimum qualification. Don't need to have any special qualifications. Just be a human being and say we're not having this. That's all. Okay,
Michael. Okay. Thank you so much. This makes a huge difference. This is, in my view, as I said, the first thing that got me when Wolfgang and I were riding the subway in Berlin over a year ago, he casually mentioned that he asked me, you know, of course, that the PCR test cannot tell us anything about infection. I pulled him back into the car and asked him, what? So that was the first smoking gun. But this is much more important, because this is going to wake up so many people.
I think they're both. I hope that's true, and it should wake up people, because it's shocking. But you are right. I think the inappropriate use of PCR, plus the lies, including asymptomatic transmission, I think that was absolutely required to establish the sort of the mass formation to get people frightened. The irony is now that we can, the leaders are even telling us now that the masks don't work. There's question marks being asked, or statements being made, even by senior leaders saying, well, these cloth masks don't work, new data. And they, I think, Wolfgang, they've changed the, or withdrawn the approval for certain PCR tests. So now, I would like to attach, Corbyn, the two interviews I've got, the one with the High Wardale Bigtree, but also this accumulation of 16 minutes of film, which has Fauci and Kukov telling you that asymptomatic transmission has never been the driver of respiratory viral epidemics. Yes. That's the exact quote. That's all I'm saying. So I don't know why you think I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm saying what he has said. It's just he's changed his tune. Every few weeks he says something different, and then suddenly he is the science. It's just nonsense. He's a liar, and he's, you know, anyone who follows him, given the evidence of his repeated lies, you know, I'm afraid he's a bit foolish. And I ask them to, you know, look at this in the round. It's not normal what's going on, is it? No. And it's no one. You know, I've been told no one's coming to save us. I know there are some people. I know some people who know it's not right, but they're kind of sitting tight. They don't know what to do. And they said, if I speak out, I'll lose my job. I say, if you don't speak out, you will lose your liberty permanently.
And your life.
And possibly your life. Certainly, you will lose your liberty permanently. Mm. You know, so I don't understand that. The people are choosing. They can get another bloody job. Even if you do get fired, you know, take a holiday. You know, say to yourself, I'm going to speak out because it's the right thing to do. And if I get fired, I'll be jobless for a year. You know, the people who are professionals that are earning big salaries can easily cope with a year of not having any income. It's different if you're like 30-something and you're the sole breadwinner. I understand. You know, you're paying, you're looking after three or four people. I'm not asking you to sacrifice your job. That's crazy. But honestly, you senior consultants, people in your 50s and 60s, get off your butt, you know, make public statements, make them fire you, you know, take them to court. You're strong enough to do that. You've got the resources to do that. If you don't do that, you've allowed your children and grandchildren just to be ground underneath the tracks of this monster. That's what you're doing. So stop it. We can do it.
We will do it. These are crimes against humanity. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But we do have a few friends of humanity amongst us as well.
Good stuff. All right. Well, good afternoon, good evening, and to anyone who's spent all the time watching, thank you for your patience. I wish I could do the short form, but sometimes you have to have the long form in order to then, you know, take the skinny from it. So thank you very much for watching, and you know, do something with what you've heard today, please.